From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
One of the most fascinating contests in the May election will be in the seat of Warringah on Sydney's northern beaches. Former Prime Minister Tony Abbott is under what is seen as a serious challenge from a high-profile independent, Zali Steggall. She's a former winter sports Olympian, a barrister, and a long-term local. The University of Canberra's Democracy 2025 project has commissioned landscape research to conduct focus groups in the electorate, and you can find the results of the first round reported on the Conversation's website. In this podcast, we bring you interviews with Tony Abbott and Zali Steggall. We spoke with Mr. Abbott when he was in Canberra last week and with Ms. Steggall this week. Tony Abbott, why has Warringah suddenly become a big battleground? In earlier years, no one gave it a thought. It was a bit dicey at the last election, but before that, it always seemed absolutely safe.
Well, I've always given it a thought, Michelle. I've never taken my seat for granted. I know that the margin has mostly been 10% and above, but you can't neglect your electorate. It doesn't matter what the margin is. Back in 2001, I had a very serious challenge from a very credible opponent, the then popularly elected Mayor of Manly, the former independent state MP, Peter MacDonald, and that was a serious challenge. It dented my margin. This is more serious, though, because for at least 3 years, GetUp have been planning a challenge here. I expect that one way or another, they'll have at least $1 million to throw into the campaign. In other words, it's a full-on marginal seat campaign, and I'm responding appropriately. But look, all I can assume is that the Green left, whether it's in the Labor Party, whether it is in the Greens, or whether it's these more left-wing than Labor independents, they'd obviously like to get rid of me. And for someone who they say is a washed-up has-been, they're putting a lot of effort into it.
How much is the contest in the seat being run on national issues and how much on local ones? And can you just briefly spell out those two levels of issues?
Well, I'm the only one who's talking about local issues. I'm focusing on the Northern Beaches Tunnel. We must get this tunnel built in order to get our lives back. Our area is choking on its own traffic.
Isn't that a state issue?
No, it's a local issue. It is first and foremost a local issue, and we are only going to get the tunnel, if we get the tunnel, because you've had a good state Liberal government in place at the same time as a good federal Liberal government. Now, the state Liberal government will actually do the building, but it can only do it because of the funding partnerships that the federal Liberal government have put in place that have made it possible. And the tunnel needs a champion, and there's no more effective champion than a former Prime Minister, because I've got just about the biggest megaphone in the country.
What about if there's a Labor federal government? Do you think you can influence them?
Well, I certainly think that if there is a Labor government at either, well, if there's a Labor government at the state level, I will be working with the federal Liberal government to persuade that government to go ahead with what its predecessor began. If there's a federal Labor government, and I hope there won't be, I'll certainly be wanting to work with the state Liberal government to ensure that the work goes ahead and goes ahead as quickly as possible. But the fact is, none of the independents support the tunnel, and the Labor Party has said that it will cancel it. So if the people of Warringah and the Northern Beaches more generally want the tunnel, there's really only one choice, and that is to vote Liberal at every level of government.
Now, your main independent opponent is campaigning strongly on climate change, an issue that resonates with so-called doctors' wives voters. How much is the climate change issue being raised with you, and what do you say to those voters?
Well, over the last year or so, I've had at least five Meet the Member public meetings. I've distributed literally tens of thousands of survey forms, and I've had literally thousands and thousands come back. Overwhelmingly, the biggest issue in my area is overdevelopment and traffic congestion. Overwhelmingly, these are the big issues. Now, sure, national issues count. People are concerned about climate. I'm concerned about climate. I just don't think that we should turn our economy upside down when even the chief scientist says that whatever we do will make virtually no difference to the global climate. So look, it's a mix of local and national issues. As I said, the only issues that are mentioned locally are traffic and overdevelopment. In terms of national issues, sure, climate change is an issue with quite a few of my constituents, but so are Labor's massive new taxes, particularly the hit on retirees, which will badly damage 10,000 people in my electorate, and the negative gearing changes, which threaten to make your house worth less and make your rent cost more, which is a double whammy for people.
Now, in an article recently about why you should be returned, you wrote that the idea that ex-PM should move on is absurd. You also defended the right of a backbencher in your position to speak up, as you've done over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But isn't this often an irritant to a government?
Well, it shouldn't be, particularly a Liberal government, because Liberal governments support people's right to speak their mind. Backbenchers are perfectly free to speak their mind. In fact, it would be a pity if they didn't. What's the point of being a backbencher if you aren't able to speak your mind while at the same time strongly supporting the thrust of government policies? So look, I think I still have a lot to give to the country and to the party, and I think I can do it better from inside the parliament than outside the parliament.
So looking ahead, if you hold your seat, what are you telling your constituents are your plans for the next 3 years? If there's a coalition government, would you expect to be a minister? If the coalition is in opposition, would you have a crack at the leadership?
Mm. Well, my plan is to be the best possible member for Warringah, Michelle, and that's all I can plan for. Whether anything else happens is entirely a matter for the party room or for the party leader. So all I'm planning to be is the best possible member for Warringah. All I want to do right now is to win my seat with the best possible margin. And that's why I'm saying to people over and over again, if you want the Northern Beaches Tunnel, you've got to vote for someone who believes in it. I think I can ensure that it is actually delivered. And if you want a government in Canberra that keeps our community safe and our economy strong, you've got to vote Liberal, because the Labor Party, as we know, can't be trusted in either national security, they can't be trusted with the economy.
Now, in terms of the campaign on the ground, are you getting in manpower from other electorates?
Look, the short answer is, if people want to come and volunteer to work in Warringah, I'm certainly not discouraging them. There are a lot of people who have responded, for argument's sake, to my Battle Lines site who aren't Liberal Party members, and I expect some of them may well want to work in Warringah. But let's face it, Michelle, I am going to need a lot of people on the ground, because GetUp, which is supporting the principal independent, GetUp has been extremely active in my electorate. They were very active in the last election, but they've tripled and quadrupled their efforts since then, and they are recruiting people from all over the metropolitan area. It seems to me that GetUp are focusing on my electorate as their main effort in this campaign right around Australia, and obviously the principal purpose of GetUp is to defeat coalition governments, to install Labor governments, and in particular to defeat conservative Liberals and try to install left-wing independents. Well, voting independent in my seat is just a vote for a Labor government.
Some of the Liberal leading independents around the place, not just in your
There are no Liberal leading independents in my seat, or indeed in any Liberal seat.
Well, some of the right-of-centre independents are very critical.
Michelle, there are no right-of-centre independents in my seat. If you take the main independent in my seat, she has never voted Liberal in her life at a federal election. That means not only was the Howard government too right-wing for her, but even the Turnbull government was too right-wing for her. Now, please, Michelle, don't insult our intelligence by describing any of the independents in my seat as right-of-centre independents. They are well and truly left-of-centre. The main independent in my seat says that Labor's not doing enough on climate change. Now, she says that the coalition is far too tough on boat people. I know she's well to the left of the Labor Party.
All right, let's come at it another way. Some within the Liberal Party are very critical of the state of the party, saying it's moved too far to the right. You yourself have been critical of the party's structures, saying that in New South Wales they're not democratic enough. Do you think that post-election there'll be a continuing battle for the soul of the party and for factional numbers within the party?
2 points, Michelle. First, no fair dinkum Liberal, could want to see a Labor government, regardless of any criticism that that person might have of the current Liberal government. No fair dinkum Liberal could want to see a Labor government. That's the first point. Second point I make is, sure, I was at the forefront of moves to reform the New South Wales Liberal Party, and they've largely succeeded. In the next electoral cycle, all lower house pre-selections will be full plebiscites of all the members in those seats, and the upper house pre-selections are going to be much more democratic, involve a much wider group of people. So while it didn't go quite as far as I would have liked, it's a very, very big improvement on what it was.
Tony Abbott, thank you very much. We watched the campaign with a lot of interest.
Thanks, Michelle.
Zali Stegel, what convinced you to put your hand up to run as an independent? Had you ever thought of doing this before? Were you approached? What's the backstory here?
No. Look, I wasn't approached. It was something that was very much brewing, I guess, in my mind over a period of time. I think as a member of the electorate and as a resident, I was getting more and more concerned at our lack of action on a number of fronts and concerned that really there was no viable alternative. And that we were sort of continuing along the same path. So as we got along 2018, I was very much looking forward to see who would be standing for the election. And the more and more I thought about it, the more I thought that I actually had something to contribute, and so decided to stand up myself.
What do you see as the key issues that people in this seat will actually vote on? What's the mix between national and local issues?
Well, from my interactions with the community, the overwhelming sentiment is that it's time for change, that they want a new voice, and actually a voice that is intent on representing the issues and concerns of the electorate in Parliament. There's no doubt that having had the same member for 25 years, who's very set in his ways and has very definite views on a number of issues, the electorate does not feel represented and overwhelmingly feel like it's time for change. There's, of course, then within that context, there's a lot of aspects like, or issues like climate change, like protecting our environment, like being more forward-facing in our approach to a number of industries that are primary concerns that keep coming back with the people that I speak to within the electorate.
Just on climate change, it's a central part of your campaign. What's been the response among voters that you've seen in the past couple of days to the announcements this week by Scott Morrison of more money for direct action and support for the Snowy Pumped Hydro Plan?
Yeah, well, the Snowy Pumped Hydro Plan was very much put forward by Malcolm Turnbull, and that's definitely something that's in course and that needs to go ahead. There's no doubt that the facts are in and renewable energy is cheaper. The question is storage, and hydro storage is the most efficient and cheapest way. So Hydro 2.0 is certainly a project that needs to be fast-tracked. As far as the coalition announcement in relation to climate change, I think there's widespread consternation that clearly the message is not getting through. that this is an issue of priority to the Australian people and to this electorate that requires real solutions and real change. And bringing out an old policy that's already been proved not to work, because our emissions have been going up in the last 4 years, let's not beat around the bush in terms of what the numbers are, is just a real consternation that it's a real lack of taking this with an earnest approach.
So do you think that Labor's policy of much more ambitious targets is in fact a viable one?
I think it's a start, but it needs, again, to be toughened up. It needs to be more ambitious in where its targets and how it's going to get there. I mean, I think under Turnbull, there had been a lot of work gone into developing the NEG, and it had bipartisan support, it had industry support, it had state support. But I think it's quite telling that Morrison and the Coalition are not prepared to put that back on the table. At the end of the day, it's clearly that inability to really come up with the real solutions.
So what sort of emissions reduction target do you think should be supported, and you would presumably put the NEG back on the table?
I think the NEG or something of that nature. I think that the benefit of the NEG is that it had already progressed to a level of development and support. So the last thing climate change action needs is another 3 years of debating and delaying real action. So from my point of view, I think we very quickly need some real mechanisms to make a difference. But we also need to talk across the spectrum. It's not just about energy and targets. It's about looking at all the solutions. And that's where I thought the Coalition's announcement was so lacking in detail and maybe foresight. There's very little, focus or storage. There needs to be some storage targets, for example. There needs to be some real focus on electrification of transport and our grid, turning towards a smarter and more efficient grid. We need more efficient use of energy. I think in all those ways, when we can have a conversation about climate change that is more than just about energy, but about the range of areas that we need to address, I think then we can realistically talk about reaching some real targets.
In other policy areas, what's your position on the ALP's policies to curb negative gearing and scrap cash refunds for franking credits?
Yeah, I don't support them. I think they're very divisive policies. And I think they're an unfair real focus on a small portion, well, actually probably not as small as they're making it out to be, part of the population. I mean, in relation to franking credits, you have self-funded retirees who have, for the last 10, 15 years, committed to an investment strategy on the advice of both sides of, Labor and Liberal governments, coalition governments, in terms of what strategies they should go, how to support and invest in the Australian stock market and companies. And to suggest that one can now just about face or change investment strategies, I think completely unrealistic and completely missing the point in terms of actually coming up with policy that is appropriate for all Australians and not just looking at sort of targeting a small group.
You only announced that you would be a candidate a few weeks ago. Do you think that you've given yourself enough time to dig in as a candidate, should you have announced late last year or even earlier last year?
Well, I guess that's a million-dollar question that we will find out in May. I think we've had it's sufficient time to establish the clear alternatives for the people in Warringah. They certainly know what they're getting with our current member. It's not like he's going to change. We've had the same views and policies for 25 years. So it's a very clear choice, really, of old and new for people in Warringah. And in terms of establishing myself in terms of policies, I've got the benefit of a huge amount of sort of engagement from the community that has been involved for the last 12 to 24 months in terms of getting to know the concerns of the community. What are the issues that matter? We had last year the same-sex plebiscite, for example, that really crystallised a lot of views for people in the electorate. I think I'm one of many moderate Liberals who want to see progress on actions like climate change, and that's really what I think at the end of the day is going to come up for the choice at the election. So I don't know that more time would change those parameters. I think we've got enough time. It's a slightly busy period, I think, because of having a state election as well, which complicates the issue in voters' minds. So that creates a bit of confusion in terms of what are state issues and what are federal issues. But at the end of the day, a representative is really there to take on board the concerns of the electorate.
Are you finding it easier to tap into any particular demographics?
I've been really interested to actually understand the demographic better. So the average age in the electorate is 38, which is actually younger than I expected. We're the most second affluent electorate in Australia, but with a very diverse range of incomes. There are certainly certain issues that maybe are not as not at the forefront of discussions here that they may be in other electorates. But I'm really enjoying actually the process of interacting with people in terms of understanding where their concerns are. And there's no doubt dealing with millennials and younger, you know, that younger than sort of, if our average age is 38, is understand what kind of future they are hoping for, what kind of representative they want for the kind of industry and opportunities they're hoping for.
Now, you describe yourself as a moderate liberal. Just finally, you've said that you've never voted for Tony Abbott and you've said you've not been a Labor voter. In the past, in this electorate, have you voted Green or have you voted for Independence or have you at times voted for both of those?
A mix, I would say. See, I turned 18 in 1992. So the only federal member that's ever been since I've been of voting age for the federal election has been Mr Abbott. So I know there's been a lot of commentary on that, but I think maybe the maths have escaped. For me, it has been about focusing on the issues and the candidates. So I have at times, independents have generally taken more my fancy when it's come to the federal election. I've been a lot more satisfied with liberal and moderate sort of approach when it comes to state politics and local politics. But from a federal point of view, as much as I was comfortable with Turnbull government proposal, my difficulty was probably with Mr Abbott in terms of some of his more extreme views on a number on some issues.
But you've never been a Greens voter federally?
I wouldn't want to say never to never be roasted on the stake. I don't believe I have. I think I've mostly voted independent. But I wouldn't want to say never, never.
Sally Stegall, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
And that's all for today's podcast. Thanks to my producer, Eliza Boulage. We'll be back with another interview soon, but goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevere. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.